Have you ever gone to bed after having a fight with your partner and thought, we can't go to sleep until this resolved? And you lay awake at night thinking, why won't they talk to me? Why won't they just see my point of view? And you can stay up until 2 a.m. fighting about it. And eventually, maybe they just say, fine, yes, whatever, you're right, I'm sorry. But it doesn't really feel that great. Today, I'm talking with Monica Tanner, relational life therapy certified relationship coach and the host of the podcast, Secrets of Happily Ever After. And we're talking about bad marriage advice, which is also the name of her new Amazon best-selling book. Welcome to the podcast, Monica.
Thank you so much for having me.
How did you know? Well, how did this book come about? Bad marriage advice. Tell us about the story behind this because the title is fantastic. I can't believe someone hasn't already written that book.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that's funny because I researched the title when it came to me on Amazon and I was shocked that there wasn't already a book called Bad Marriage Advice. It was a beautiful sign and I used it. The way this book came about is my oldest son called me and said, Mom, I've met the girl I'm going to marry. I'm going to propose next month. And he was only 21 years old at the time. And I thought, oh my goodness, have I taught him all of that he needs to know about marriage? And I sat down to write him a letter about just, it was like a beginner guide meets cautionary tale. What do you need to know from your mama before you jump into this crazy adventure? And it quickly turned into that book because I knew that so many well-meaning, well-intentioned adults were going to give him advice. And I knew from a personal experience in my own marriage and also working with lots and lots of couples over the years that a lot of that advice was going to be really bad.
What's one of the ones that you thought this is just terrible advice? And maybe you've heard it or a couple has come in and spoken to you about it. How did you know it was bad advice?
So much of it is just from my own personal experience. And you opened up the show beautifully with that very common and I think misguided advice about not going to bed angry. I think that originally was biblical. You hear all the time from the scriptures, don't let the sun set on your wrath. And I think it's a beautiful scripture and also very misinterpreted to mean don't go to sleep when you're angry. And I would say, after years and years of experience, that please, if you are not coming to a conclusion quickly and it's late at night, please go to sleep and revisit this in the morning.
What do you think it meant? Don't let the sun set on, was it wrath? What's the phrase? What do you think it actually meant?
Yeah, I think it means don't leave things unresolved in your marriage or in your relationship for that matter. This could apply to you and your boss or you and your mother-in-law or you and your children, right? I think that it's very wise advice to, if you're feeling feelings or resentment or discontent with somebody else, then don't let the sun set on your anger, meaning don't leave these things unresolved. Bring them up and talk skillfully about what's happening. But I don't think in any universe it means don't go to sleep angry.
So it's more of a metaphor rather than instructions.
Right, absolutely. I know I can tell you personally, I have lost so much sleep over this advice and trying to do it the right way. When I was young, I laugh because I was so nervous about my son getting married at 22. My husband, they were on the younger end of 22, and my husband and I were on the older end of 22. But nonetheless, we were all 22 when we got married. So it's fine. But I knew that he was going to get the advice, don't go to bed angry, because I got that advice so much when I was young and in love and we were getting married and all of these amazing couples came through the line at our reception or came to my bridal shower and they wrote on the card, never go to bed angry. And I was so determined to get it right at that very young age that I took it super literally. And my husband and I, in our younger years, we would get disagreements, or we would be frustrated with each other before bed because we were exhausted. And my husband would, after a little bit of back and forth, would just roll over and start snoring. And he would leave me like shaking and crying and writing in my journal and trying to figure out what to do. And I had all these emotions that like I didn't know how to resolve about how he didn't care about me and he didn't love me and he didn't care about all these people that said we would be successful in our marriage if we just didn't go to bed angry. And I thought, based on my experiences in life, that this meant he just was gonna wake up and leave me. I would get myself so worked up until one day I realized, and this was long before I had any formal training, I just thought to myself, maybe he doesn't know what it's like to be me. Definitely he doesn't know what it's like to be me. And so one night he rolled over and went to sleep, and my brain started spiraling out of control as it always did. And I like tapped, and I got really vulnerable about my experiences when I was young and my idea that men always left women and that I felt very uncared for and unloved when he just rolled over and went to sleep. And I remember him saying, "Oh my goodness, I love you and I'm not going anywhere. I'm just really tired and I need to sleep. And I know from experience that you're not going to let me do that." And he was right, because I was very dedicated to not going to bed angry. And so in order to reconcile the two, he was like, "I gotta just go to bed." But so he was very gracious and understanding. And I also realized that I needed to ask for what I wanted or needed in that instance. And so I said, "Hey, listen, next time this happens, would you mind saying that, what you just said? I love you. I'm not going anywhere, but right now I need to get to sleep." And when he would do that, it would allow me to calm my nervous system down just enough to be able to get some sleep. And the most beautiful, magical thing happened, because my husband is a morning bird and I was a night owl. And so he typically wakes up before me. And every morning, when after a fight, he would roll over and wrap me up in his strong arms. And he would say, "I'm so sorry I was a jerk last night," or, "I'm sorry we fought," or, "I'm sorry we disagreed about this thing. Let's talk about it." And it built so much trust and resilience in our relationship that I could always count on him taking responsibility for what happened the night before. And sometimes in the morning, I was like, "I don't even remember what I was upset about. Let's just have a great day," right? But sometimes I'd be like, "Oh, you said this thing and it really hurt my feelings." But in the morning, after we had both rested, we had a fresh perspective and could really flesh out what was happening with fresh eyes and a new perspective. And so I tell all of my clients how important it is. I use the acronym HALTS. Never try to settle an argument or make a big decision when either of you are hungry, angry, lonely, tired, or stressed. HALTS. Just put a pause on it. And we talk a lot about responsible distance taking, which is exactly what I unknowingly trained my husband to do, which is to say, "Hey, listen, I love you. I'm not going anywhere, but right now I'm too tired to talk about this. So let's take a pause and come back to it in the morning." And that is really great relational skill.
I love that. I've used a HALTS before, but I add a P, so for pain, because if you're in pain as well, that's not going to work. You mentioned he had no idea what it was like to be you. And sometimes, because we don't see these as thoughts, we see them as facts, we don't even have that awareness or that ability to say, "Hang on, maybe they don't know what's happening for me," because in your mind, in that moment, it was fact. We can't go to bed angry. That is the rule. It is in the Bible. I've been giving it as advice. He must know this. Therefore, he's doing XYZ intentionally, or this is the reason or the meaning. How did you separate the impact versus intention, thought, fact, into something that allowed you to do it differently and that allows your couples to do it differently?
There's two kind of prongs to this. When your partner is having what feels to you like an outsized reaction to what's happening, meaning their response or reaction is way bigger than you feel like it could or should be, almost always that's because they're not reacting to what's happening right in front of them, but they're reacting to a long line of trauma or childhood experiences that most often has nothing to do with you. So let that be disarming to you. You can show up with curiosity and say, "Hey, I noticed this is really big for you. I noticed when I roll over and go to sleep, you're like shaking and crying, and what's going on for you? So oftentimes I can tell a couple that and they can go, oh, okay, it's not about me. So I can get really curious about it and ask about it and sometimes get to the bottom of it. So that's one way. That doesn't always work. So the what I do to teach couples about separating thoughts and facts, because as humans, most of us go around operating as if everything that we think is a fact. And that gets us in a lot of trouble. And so I teach couples this exercise called a thought download. And what I do is I have them get paper and pen, which is hard for young people. They want to pull out their take notes on their phone, but I'm like, nope, paper and pen. And I'll have them set a timer for 3 minutes and I'll have them take whatever scenario is giving them trouble. So let's say it's their partner is going to bed angry and they are having a lot of emotion about it. I'll say, set the clock for 3 minutes and write everything you think and feel. Just dump everything out of your brain. Don't edit it. Don't judge it. Don't worry about punctuation or accuracy. Just dump out everything that's happening in your head. And then I want you to take an additional piece of paper and I want you to make a line down the middle and put facts on one side and thoughts on the other. And what you'll, and I'll give them a little bit of instruction. Facts are what security cam footage would pick up. It's what can be proven without a shadow of a doubt in a court of law. And what I find and what clients will find when they do this is that very few things that have been poured out are actually facts. The facts of that scenario are very few. I have a husband, that's a fact. He rolled over at 10:47 and was snoring at 10:58. Those are the facts. Everything else on that paper goes in the thought line. It's just my thoughts about the situation. And it's really poignant to be able to see that so many of the things that I'm like, he doesn't care about me, he doesn't love me, he doesn't care about all these people that gave us this advice. Those are all thoughts, and thoughts are optional. And so thoughts actually create our feelings and how we show up in the world, and therefore the results we get. And so I do a lot of coaching on thoughts and the power of our thoughts to create our reality. And so that is how I help clients see how powerful their thoughts actually are.
How can a couple, when they are doing that activity, empathize with their partner's thoughts? Because they are optional and some are so ingrained that they feel true. Stories like, I'm too much, I'm unworthy, I'm unlovable, or here I go again, or here is proof. It can feel really dismissive to just say, just choose a different thought. So, how do we have empathy for ourselves or our partner when those thoughts feel so true for them?
You're right. And what you're describing are deeply ingrained beliefs that were planted there a long time ago. And yeah, you're right. The way I work with clients is through a modality called relational life therapy. And relational life therapy has three phases. The first phase, when a couple comes in to see me, is all about recognizing and diagnosing their dynamic or their pattern. We call it the stance dance. So it's when you bump up against a challenge or a disagreement or whatever, what is the dynamic there that we take into consideration their family of origin, we take into consideration. They're losing strategies, their stance, as we would say, that where they go on what we call the relational grid, meaning how what their relationship is with their self-esteem and setting boundaries. So we do a lot of kind of diagnostic work to find out how the couple is interacting with each other. And then in stage two is where we do inner child trauma work, where we talk about what are those beliefs, like you just described, that are locking their responses into place. And so we go back and we talk about the things that they are modeling or the things that they're reacting to in their childhood. Like, where did that belief that you're not enough or you don't deserve love or that some people are going to leave you, where did those originate? And what are the adaptations you created as a young person to protect yourself from those things? And that's where we really really break down a lot of barriers for people who, when we feel that whoosh, when we're activated or triggered, we don't care about connecting anymore. We just want to protect ourselves. And so just doing that work is such a beautiful process, and it creates a lot of compassion for both self-compassion for the client and compassion of their partner towards the client, because they can see now it's about way more than what's happening in the moment, but what set them up to respond that way to things. And so I absolutely love working with individuals and clients on this, because it really is a beautiful process.
So, what did you and your husband learn about your stance or how you interpreted that moment? Because he would have had a very different experience as well. And he's not here, so we can't ask him. But there might have been a whole bunch of stuff happening. I can't get it right. Why won't she let me sleep? What's the big deal? I didn't mean there'd be a whole thing for him. How did the two of you navigate this process now that you've got that more relationship coaching language? They can look back on that time
Well, I was
and
going to say,
think.
back when we were doing it, was very messy. It was definitely not very skillful on either side. But now that I have had a lot of this training, I did ask my husband to come with me to an RLT boot camp where we learned the language of a lot of this. And so we now have a shared language when things happen. We're a lot more skillful. That doesn't mean that we use the skills all the time. In our worst moments, our marriage looks just like everybody else's, right? We can still fight, and our adoptive children can still go at it and all of the things. But we tend to be able to repair quicker and stronger because we do now are able to use these skills. So it's just really about gaining awareness. It's about emotional maturity. It's about being able to notice, like, whoosh, I got the whoosh, right? Like, I'm not functioning in my wise adult in this very moment. Like, I'm thrown back into that protective stance. How can I take a couple of breaths and bring that wise adult back online? And if I can't immediately, then we take a break. Then we take a time out.
I love the wise adult and the child. There's a saying I heard, and it's a little bit, I'm not sure. I always love it, but it really makes sense to people. If you're hysterical, it's historical. So often if the feelings are big,
Yes.
it's come from somewhere else. So how do you help a partner or a couple, anybody, recognize, even though that wasn't their intention, that was the impact or interpretation that their partner took? And to have that conversation without getting defensive or without trying to justify why their partner shouldn't feel that way, because that's not what they meant. And if I had a dollar for every time I saw that, I wouldn't need to be working. That's such a big stuck point for couples, is really trying, and families do this as well. I do a lot of family work. It's just trying to talk the person out of feeling that way, because that wasn't my intention, rather than being curious or understanding. Because it's, if I understand it or if I acknowledge it, then it's like I'm agreeing that you should feel that way. How do you help people navigate empathy and validation?
I don't think there's a great way. A lot of it is just psychoeducation, and you said a lot of it, right? I talk a lot about how understanding does not equal agreement. You can understand someone and not agree with their position. And I see that as a stumbling block for people all the time. And understanding that understanding does not equal acceptance or agreement is really important, and leading with curiosity. So, like you said, if they're hysterical, it's historical. And so being able to see your partner and they're having a very outsized response to what's really happening, if you can take a deep breath and go, I'm curious, tell me about what's happening for you right now. If you can release yourself from, that's probably not about me, that's probably about their abusive father or something, whatever else, right? And so it's just a practice. It's a practice of being able to bring your wise adult back online. It's feeling the whoosh, recognizing it, and then being able to calm that adaptive inner child inside of us and bringing the wise adult back online. And one or both partners can do this in any point. And so it just takes practice. It's a skill, just like any other skill. If we're learning a new sport or an instrument or how to cook something, we have to be willing to put in the reps to be bad at it before we're good at it. But even using these skills badly, you're still going to be so far ahead as if you're just trying to navigate it 100% on your own.
The tone makes a difference there when you said be curious. For people listening, that doesn't mean you go up to your partner and say, "Is this something else?" Or are you like getting your period? Or are you just like super hungry? Like, how invalidating. It's actually taking that step back to say, "Babe, are you okay?" Or is there something bigger going on? Or even give them a hug or let them vent and sit with that. It's not accusing them of being reactive or irrational, because that's a doing it bad that might actually make things worse.
You're right. A lot of times I notice couples, they don't have certain conversations because they typically go badly. And that's a great example of why I might be real skeptical about asking what's going on for you because it doesn't typically go well. And you have couples that really do walk on eggshells around each other or don't bring up certain topics or they find a way to stabilize the misery. And so if you feel that you're doing that, if you're feeling like you have to walk on eggshells, you can't bring up certain topics, I would definitely recommend finding a therapist or a coach that can help you walk through these things because they're not going to go away. And what we suppress, what's that saying? I don't know. What happens is if we're not talking about it, it's going to come out badly. It's going to come out passive aggressive. Eventually it's going to blow up. Eventually it's going to eat up all the generosity and love in the relationship. So learning how to communicate about those difficult topics, sensitive topics, reactive topics is necessary. I don't think you can get very far just ignoring some of the big things that are happening between you. I would definitely say get some help to sort
Yeah.
through all of it.
I usually encourage people to talk about it when it's not reactive. So if you've never done this before, don't just send your partner a link to this episode with no context, because if that's something that you do often and you've got a back and forth and they just know that means, oh, check this out, and they do it back and you've got that, cool. But if you're like, great, now I'm going to send it to them so they can see how they're getting it wrong, it's not going to work. If you listen to it and you found something helpful, that's a really good chance to say, hey, babe, I heard this podcast and I recognize something we don't do well, or I got wrong, or I have had some ideas that I thought we could talk about. Can I share them with you and insert the time? So, can we talk about this on the weekend? Or if you've got time this week, could you listen to the episode and tell me what you think about it? Is actually talk about how you're going to bring that up when it's not heated. Because one of the biggest mistakes I see people make, and they do this, I've done it too, go to couples therapy, you sit down, you're like, great, the therapist or the coach will now tell my partner what they've done wrong. And people will pick up this episode, be like, this is great. Now I can send this to my partner so he knows how hard it is for me when he rolls over and goes to sleep. And that's great, but it's not exactly the nuance that we want you to take away. How can you help people have that conversation if they've listened to this? I thought, okay, cool. Maybe I don't need a RLT boot camp right now, or therapy just doesn't feel like we don't need that, or it's not on the cards, or financially, whatever. But this was something I'd never thought of before. How might they start the conversation?
I think that the biggest tip I could give you about that is listen to the episode, figure out what your takeaway is for you, right? And then send your partner a note and say, "Hey, I listened to this podcast. I realized that I do this thing, and here's the takeaway I got from this episode. And I would love to talk about it with you." And I would definitely come at it from a mindset of what is it like to be married to me? So I listened to this episode. This is what I learned from it. I really want to know from your perspective, what is it like to be married to me? And open up the discussion that way.
I've seen people, not just in my couples therapy room, but across friendships, where the scenario you described about the rolling over in the bedroom can be replicated with sending a link to a podcast episode or buying a book. And it's the exact same pattern of, I've sent you this. Have you read it yet? Or have you listened to it yet? Nope, I've been busy. And then either the pressure of, have you done it yet? Have you done it yet? Creates another problem. Or they pull away completely, and the other person thinks this maybe wasn't important or I forgot about it. And then the person is inside making all these assumptions. They don't care. I'm the only one investing. If they cared, they would. Why won't they learn this? They said they can't, but is it that they won't? And again, all of those thoughts, when the fact might be I sent a link, they haven't told me they've listened to it. That might be the only fact.
Only facts.
So, do you see this pattern emerge as well? Because I'm sure that there are people listening who will have sent their partner, do it like 30 reels or 30 TikToks or something, and be interpreting their response or lack thereof in a certain way. And sometimes it can be done with humor. I remember seeing a post that was like, I've sent you 30 reels. And that's just you. That's me saying, I've thought of you 30 times today, you stupid potato. Just something really funny, but it can actually be really painful if you're giving them clues or hints of listen, read, digest this, do something different.
Again, if therapy or coaching is not in the cards, if you're not ready for that, I would just get really curious. Hey, I noticed I sent you a link to this podcast. It was really meaningful to me. I'm really curious why you haven't taken the time to listen to it. And really, the reality is give your partner, see if you can't give your partner the benefit of the doubt. If they haven't listened to it, there's probably a reason for it. Go find out what that is, right? And open up the conversation and make it a really safe place. Your partner might get vulnerable and say, oh, I'm afraid if I listen to it, and it's going to indict me of all of these things, and I'm going to be the bad guy, and then I'm going to have all this work to do or whatever. Find out what are they afraid of? What are they avoiding? What are they mistrusting? And then be real honest. Yeah, I listened to that podcast and I thought of these things that I could be working on. I would love to feel like partners in this, like we're both working to create more love and connection in the relationship. I would feel better about that if I knew that you were also listening to these things or doing these things, right? And so just the more truth you can get on the table, the better you're going to be. And that's a really difficult but important thing because as humans, we think we're so clever. We think that we're hiding things from our partner. But in reality, they're usually tracking us pretty clearly. What's not said is just as important as what is. And so if we can really tap into that wise adult part of us and get real honest, why do we do the things that we do? Why are we acting and responding and thinking and being the way that we are? The more of that we can get out on the table and communicate clearly with our partner, the better off we're going to be. So if you need somebody to help you and guide you through that, I would seek help. If you feel like you can do it on your own, then definitely give it a shot. If it doesn't go well, see if you can find some help.
Yeah, I really love that. As you're describing how you might introduce it, and I described how I introduce it, I can see some people rolling their eyes thinking that's just therapy talk. And some people thinking this level of communication just feels too hard. And where I see that it really pisses me off is in, I'd say, online dating profiles where people, mostly guys, but not always, will just say, I just don't want drama. They see all of this as drama. How do we help someone who maybe they're committed, they've got children, they're thinking, I'm in this, I really want to give it a red hot go, but my partner is seeing this evolution of language as drama. This is just too much drama, just get over it. How do we help them, or if the male partner's listening, recognize the importance? And it does create safety and security. So if you do it for a while, you don't need to usually do it forever because the system has calmed down. But how do we help someone recognize it's not drama to have feelings and to want your partner to talk about that? And also, we're not expecting your partner to be your therapist or your best friend or your everything, but there are some things that you need to be able to talk about together.
Yeah, I love this question because it brings up a couple of things. A lot of times I get couples in my office where one partner is really unhappy and the other one is, what the heck is the problem? And so in that type of unequal dynamic, it's really important for the partner who is unhappy to stand up for themselves with loving power. And part of that might include making your partner uncomfortable, and I get a lot of pushback when I say it this way, but If you're unhappy in your relationship and your partner, of course, and your partner feels like everything's okay, of course they're going to be telling you, settle down. It's not that big of a deal. What's so wrong with this, right? And there's, you can call it gaslighting or whatever, there's going to be pushback, right? Because they don't, if they're not uncomfortable, they're not going to be motivated to do the work. And so sometimes the partner who's unhappy is going to have to create some discomfort for the partner who isn't happy. And what this looks like, and what I will help my clients do is listen, this is really important to me. It's really important to me that we go and we see a coach or a counselor to help us work through some of this. Found somebody I think would be helpful. I set an appointment for a week from Friday. I would really like you to come. Now, your partner's going to either agree or disagree to that. And I would invite kindly with love all the way up until the point. And if your partner still refuses, I might have to go so far as say, I love you. I want this to work. If you're going to choose not to come work on this with me, then I'm going to not sleep in the bed with you. I'm going to move out of our bedroom, or I'm not going to go to social engagements with you anymore, or I'm not going to cook dinner for you anymore, or whatever it is, right? And it's not, and you've got to make it clear. You got to get really clean about it. It's not, I'm trying to hurt you, but I need you to understand that this is important to me. And that's what that looks like.
Yep, that's very interesting. I had one person describe it as, if your partner's going to therapy to talk about your relationship, do you want to have a voice in that or not? And so if they're saying, I'm going with or without you, do you want them to have the therapist here and just talk about you without you having a say? So sometimes that can work for people, but also having
Yeah, the
someone.
problem I see with that is the partner who's not uncomfortable might just say, "Oh, that's great. Go to therapy and figure yourself out. Don't bother me
Maybe.
with
And sometimes
it."
that can still be helpful because if one person recognizes the pattern that they're playing, if we go back to that example you said earlier, you doing something different around, hey, maybe you don't know what it's like to be me. Here's what happens for me when you roll over. That was enough to create a change. It wasn't, I'm going to share this with you. So tomorrow morning, you wake up, apologize, and hug me, and we're good. You did something different, and that had a different impact. So there's still a lot of things that people can change just by working on themselves.
Yes, I think you're right.
This has been, we could talk about this for ages, and I really do want to, but we're running out of time. How can people find you, work with you? Tell us if they want to hear more, and we'll put links to everything in the show notes as well.
Yeah, thank you so much for asking. So you can go to my website, which is my name, monicatanner.com, and there you can find all my free resources, which include my podcast, Secrets of Happily Ever After, and all of my social media content. You can also find out how to work with me there. So just monicatanner.com.
Fantastic. And any last parting bad marriage advice, ignore things?
I would just say the through line in the book is if it engenders lazy communication or dampens down communication or creates less communication, it is bad marriage advice. If it raises the level of communication or challenges you to communicate in a more mature, sophisticated way, then it is good advice. And that's a good way to root out the bad advice.
I love that. That's fantastic. Thanks so much for joining me on this complex life.
Thank you for listening. To keep the conversation going, head on over to Instagram or LinkedIn and follow me. If you'd like to keep updated with episodes and other interesting things happening in mental health, join my weekly This Complex Life newsletter, where I'll share tools, tips, and insight. There's a link in the show notes. Got a question you want answered? Shoot me an email or a DM. I'd love to hear from you. And if you enjoy the show, I'd really appreciate it if you could leave a rating and a review. It helps other people find the podcast.